I don't think there's much doubt, but he played through adversity. He played through injury. No doubt, given he was the two-time MVP in the league. This year's Bill Russell, Finals MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
That is Giannis being handed basketball's most coveted trophy last month. Footage courtesy of the Milwaukee Bucks as they defeated the Phoenix Suns in Game 6 to take the NBA championship on home court. The new biography is called Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP. Author Miran Fader is on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you admire Giannis? What about his story, his place in basketball greatness, or love for Milwaukee resonates with you as a fan? It's 800-642-1234. Miran Fader is a staff writer for The Ringer. This is her first book. Miran, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, please indulge us by starting with the national championship title. What did you see and feel in Giannis and the Bucks becoming the NBA champions last month?
Oh my gosh, it was so wonderful. I mean, I interviewed a lot of Milwaukee natives and Milwaukee fans who had suffered through so many decades of hard times loving this team. And to see them have their moment in the sun, you know, this is the best thing to happen to them. It's so deserved, and it's just so awesome to see. And Giannis really just cemented himself as one of the game's all-time best.
Your book gave so much context, I think, because I was having flashbacks to watching the series, and some things I would see with Giannis on the court didn't make sense to me until, you know, you kind of explained these nuances, like him talking more and, you know, his desire to make those free throws because they're free. How did he react to winning the championship game?
I was thinking of the exact same thing you did, just for full awareness with the free throw anecdote. It was so wonderful. He went straight to his mom and his family because they were there with him before all of this. They loved him for him, and they've all been through this together. You know, Giannis's story is a family story, and his championship win is really their championship win.
You know, in 2019, you wrote about the then 17-year-old Alex Antetokounmpo, who had dreams of NBA stardom. How did you shift to profiling Giannis?
Yeah, I hadn't known that Giannis was going to be there that day. And then when I walked into their home, he was just there in the kitchen doing normal things like cutting fruit. Who would think superhuman Giannis cuts fruit? And I just observed him and Alex and their mother, Veronica, for the day. And just the chemistry between all of them was so mesmerizing. And I realized that you can't really talk about Alex without talking about Giannis. And there's so many other sides of Giannis that I was seeing that day that I felt like weren't talked about as much. How vulnerable he is, how sweet he is, how kind he is, how loving he is. You know, at that time, that was before he won his first MVP. And really, the conversation was dominated by his physical gifts, his freakish athleticism. But I really observed, you know, the more human side of him. And that's what it takes to write a book. So I just thought it would be the perfect subject.
What is that relationship like, that mentorship like between Giannis and Alex?
Nobody cheers for Alex harder than Giannis. Nobody pushes Alex harder than Giannis does. He is just present. You know, Giannis acts like he's not a superstar NBA player. He acts like he's a college guy at UW coming to baby brother's practice every day. You know, you would just never think that somebody of his stature and magnitude would have the time for that. But there Giannis is at practice coaching up the team like he doesn't have better things to do. He believes in Alex and all of his brothers. You know, the one thing they all shared with me is that, yes, the goal has been for Giannis to bring a championship to Milwaukee, but the larger goal is to have all his brothers in the NBA succeeding, and he will do whatever it takes to do that.
And these brothers have been so close, and their athleticism is just so incredible. What is that drive like, that work ethic, that, you know, that stubbornness that Giannis has?
Yeah, you know, you never have to tell him try harder. You never have to tell him work harder. Same with all of the brothers. There's just this innate drive in them that doesn't have a quit. And that goes back to childhood when they're observing their parents, Charles and Veronica, struggling, working super long hours, trying to sell trinkets at these outdoor markets. And, you know, their parents never had to say, you have to work hard. They just observed it. Like, that's just what you do. You're not special because you work hard. That's just a part of what a normal human being does. And so I think that all of them have carried that into their basketball careers. And that is why Giannis in particular is so lovable and so coachable, and why all of his teammates and coaches have such positive things to say, because he's never not going to give you his everything.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Miran Fader, who's a staff writer for The Ringer, writing long-form human interest features on all things sports. She's author of the new book, Giannis. You can join in. Are you a fan? What do you want to know about his life story? Do you watch professional basketball? How invested are you in the players' lives and where they came from? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Miran, I was just astounded. 221 interviews for this book. You talked to so many people. Did you find like echoes of how they view this family, or you know, did you find really different, unique stories in their perspective?
Yes, I really loved talking with that many people, because I think in a book or a long form story, you have to talk to as many people as possible to get the full picture. And the excitement in their voices. Oh, you want to talk about Giannis? Oh my God, one time we were doing this, and oh, I love Veronica. You know, it's just like people that are like, I'll do anything for this guy. And my favorite ones were the childhood friends, because that has been so unexplored with Giannis's life. And to hear childhood best friends and childhood teammates and teenage coaches talk about what a young Giannis is like, you see glimmers of the personality that we see now. He's always been funny. He's always been charismatic. He's always been emotionally sensitive. And I mean that in a good way, a positive way, emotionally intelligent. And he's always just had this sacrificial part about him that will do anything for those he cares about.
And these are young people who would walk with Giannis and his brothers, take bus rides and walk for miles to get to practice together, just to play on a court with, you know, windows broken and leaky showers. So these are friendships that had gone through a lot of turmoil.
Absolutely. And these guys that helped Giannis out, that were teammates with him, were not necessarily super well off either. They were just doing better than Giannis's family, because they were mostly white. And, you know, the economy at the time was really, really hard for all Greeks, but particularly migrants and Black migrants. And so these teammates didn't really know the extent of Giannis and his family suffering at first, because Giannis wouldn't talk about it. He didn't want anyone to feel sorry for him. But it wasn't until one day at practice where Giannis fainted, did his teammates, because he hadn't eaten all day, of course, that his teammates realized the extent to which he was suffering, and they felt really, really bad. And in my interviews with them, they said, you know, after that point, everyone really tried to just chip in. Okay, here's an extra banana, here's a yogurt. And that's why it was so important to have them in the book, because they would have done this no matter what. Nobody knew Giannis was going to become Giannis. They just saw a friend in need and they wanted to help.
Charles, Giannis's father, would go a day or two when it was necessary for the family to get by, a day or two without eating so the kids could eat. What effect did that have on seeing his father not eat, on Giannis?
It was really, really hard for Giannis to see that, but he also learned what a man is. And I some of those quotes didn't make the book, but it really impressed upon Giannis that being a man is providing, it's sacrificing, it's being selfless, it's being kind. And his dad was his hero. You know, Giannis thought his dad was the most successful man in the world, even though there were days where he did not have a euro in his pocket. And Giannis wanted to be just like his dad. And I think it's so interesting that Giannis is now a father himself, because he has sort of learned the rubric of how to sacrifice as a parent, because he watched his dad do that his entire life.
We have author Miran Fader. Her new biography charts the incredible rise of NBA champion and Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo from this impoverished teenager in Greece to NBA superstar. Do you watch basketball? How invested are you in the players' lives? What players do you look up to the most? What story have you heard about Giannis's life in Greece or in Milwaukee that you want to find out more about? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Miren Fader here on the Ideas Network. There is a question that is lurking beneath the surface that haunts MVP basketball great Giannis Antetokounmpo and his brothers. What if we all went to sleep and woke up and we were back to where we started? Author Miren Fader, she explores that question through hundreds of interviews, and she's spending the hour here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are you a longtime Bucks fan, staying with the team through thick and thin? What has that journey been like? What do you think Giannis means to the city? Join in 800-642-1234. Miren Fader's new biography is called Giannis, and she stays with us. Miren, Giannis's parents, Veronica and Charles, they emigrate from Lagos, Nigeria to Greece in 91. Why did they move to Greece?
Yeah, well, originally they didn't even intend to come to Greece. They actually went to Germany at first. Charles had an opportunity to play professional soccer, and they were looking to leave because Nigeria was growing more unstable by the day. You know, the country really relied upon oil, and that was plummeting. The economy was not well. There was so much political unrest, and there just wasn't that much opportunity. And they went to Germany, but unfortunately, Charles got injured and could not play anymore, and they decided they needed to move somewhere else. And so they thought Greece. You know, Greece is a really popular destination for migrants, sometimes just passing through to go somewhere else or to get asylum or to actually stay there. And the neighborhood that they settled in, Sapolia, was actually full of other migrants from other countries. So they thought that was the best place to go.
And Giannis comes of age at a time when more than 21 million citizens of the EU out of work, Greece going bankrupt. How were the Antetokounmpos, a Black family, viewed in Greece?
Not well. It was very, very hard. First of all, they're all undocumented. Even though Giannis and his brothers were born in Greece, Greece does not offer birthright citizenship like we do here. And so even though they literally are Greek and they grew up there and they spoke Greek and went to Greek church and school and all those things, they were not considered Greek. Many Greeks just saw them as Black, Nigerian, migrants. Other. And so they were treated as other. And oftentimes Giannis would have away games and people would shout racist things like go home monkeys. And, you know, overall, the family was living in a very harsh climate, not just economically, like you outlined, but politically and racially. A neo-Nazi criminal organization, Golden Dawn, would patrol neighborhoods like Sapolia, where they grew up, and they would chase migrants and stab migrants and kill them. It was very, very hard to be a migrant in that climate. At the time, it was, you know, Golden Dawn shouting, Greece is for Greeks. And so, as Alex, the youngest brother, told me, we've always been outsiders.
You know, there was this contradiction you set up that, you know, Greece could love Giannis and still treat migrants terribly and have this racism. It seems Giannis has been so proud to be Greek and Nigerian. What are the complexities there?
I think this is one of the central tensions of the book. It is so complex. You know, Giannis genuinely is proud to be Greek, and he could not be a better ambassador for his country. He loves Greece, and he has represented them so well. But at the same time, even at this peak, highest fame, two-time NBA MVP, NBA champion, you have Greek politicians going on national TV in Greece calling him racist things. You have people putting swastikas on his murals to this day. So it's so hard to hold both of these things at one time. And I think people have a really hard time about it with Giannis because there is such an element of inspiration to his story, but it doesn't shield him from racism that other Black migrants face. And so I think Giannis is also very proud of his Nigerian roots, and he's not one or the other, Greek or Nigerian. So it is fair to say that growing up, there were really, really kind white people in Greece that helped Giannis, gave him a hot meal, supported him, treated him with dignity and respect. And there were also people that, when Giannis was given food, said to owners who did that, "Why are you giving food to the black kids?"
I was just taken aback that the Greek government, after dragging its feet on citizenship papers for years, would decide to change his last name to make it sound more Greek. Mm-hmm. He couldn't even have control over his own identity.
Yeah, that really struck me as well. And it's not like his parents got papers and had to change their names. So, you know, it was almost like trying to make him into something he already felt his entire life. He mm-hmm. felt unequivocally Greek, but he didn't need to be Antetokounmpo. He was Adetokounmpo. And it's that erasure. And so it's interesting because there's different points in Giannis's life throughout the book where I recount teammates saying, when asked, you know, "Hey, Giannis, how do you pronounce your last name? Is it Antetokounmpo or is it Adetokounmpo?" And he's like, "Oh, it doesn't matter. Whatever you want." Mm-hmm. And I just, answers like that really show me that I think Giannis himself is still contending with these aspects of his identity. You know, we forget, even though he is a multimillionaire superstar, a hero, an ambassador to the sport, just a wonderful human being, he's also 26 years old. And he has always basically had one foot in one country and another foot in another country. And I think he's really coming to terms with those identities. But even though the Greek government has dragged his feet and done so much to really do the bare minimum to support him, I personally am amazed how he was never bitter. He was never angry. He just continued to say positive things about his home country.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Miran Fader, whose new book is called Giannis, The Biography, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP. You can join in with your insights. Do you have children who play basketball? What do they think of Giannis? What different stories have you heard about Giannis and his career that you want to talk about? 800-642-1234. I want to talk a little bit about these coaches who did really support Giannis in Greece. One being Coach Zivas, Zivas?
Yeah.
Who was really welcome and compassionate to immigrants. How did Zivas help Giannis?
Yes, Zivas was so instrumental. He gave him food, money, shelter, excuse me. And he would always, you know, invite Giannis over and say, "What do you need? Have you eaten today? Are you okay? How are you feeling?" And you know, there was one teammate who said, you know, most coaches would not do that. They would just say, "Well, look at this black migrant." Zivas really was somebody that just treated everyone with dignity and respect. And he also was not a coach that purely cared about winning. So Giannis was very raw at first. He was not a superstar immediately. And so on the court, Zivas allowed Giannis to make mistakes and to get better. And he really focused on Giannis's development as a person, not just a basketball player.
And Giannis wasn't initially interested in basketball at first. And we have a clip here. Draft Express interviewed him in Athens back in February of 2013. Let's just take a listen here. Oh, I'm sorry. He basically said, "What we're trying to work on is a basketball player. I'm trying to work on the basics of basketball, a little bit of my shot." And so, he was really drawn to soccer. Is that right?
Yeah. He hated basketball at first. Can you believe it? Yeah, soccer was the sport that his dad played. And so, of course, he wanted to be exactly like his dad. And he also just loved the pace of soccer. You know, he was really coordinated. He was fast. He was intuitive. All the skills that make somebody really good on the pitch. And basketball was kind of like an afterthought. Like, okay, whatever. I guess we dribble a basketball now. But, you know, it took him a couple of years to really fall in love with it. Giannis didn't even, I guess, fall in love with basketball or play it regularly every day and, you know, really take it seriously. Like, I would like to do something with this sport until age 16, 17. So very, very late bloomer for our standards here in America, as far as like when kids start playing basketball, get scouted.
How did those scouts find him in Greece and how did they follow him around?
Well, it's so crazy because the only reason scouts found out about him is because a video circulated. Giannis managed to secure Greek agents who had this highlight video of him, and they sent it out to scouts. And then all of a sudden, the international basketball community and American basketball scouting community are buzzing, like, who is this kid? Who he's so tall, so lanky, never heard of him. He's 17. And it really just befuddled scouts because it's like, why am I hearing about this guy for the first time? And why does he play in such a terrible league? So for context, Giannis played in the A2 league, which is Greece's lowest league. And the reason is because he didn't have papers, documentation, because he was undocumented. And so he could not play for the top two A1 teams, Olympiacos and Panathinaikos. And so these scouts from America, we're talking about the best of the best in the NBA, come to this little dinky gym in Zografou, which is the neighborhood that Philatleticos, the team, plays. There aren't even enough plastic chairs to house all the scouts because they're not used to this such high company. Mm. And eventually, they just like, wow, this guy has so much potential.
Hmm. Author Maren Fader profiled some of the NBA's biggest stars. Her new biography goes deeply into the Milwaukee Bucks number 34, Giannis Antetokounmpo's life story. Did you come to Wisconsin from another country? What have you seen in Giannis's journey that you can identify with? Is a love of family and perseverance qualities you admire? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network.
And no matter like whatever you feel, when you feel down, when things don't look like it's gonna happen for you, you might not make it, your career might be basketball, might be anything. Just believe in what you're doing, keep working. You know, don't let nobody tell you what you can be and what you cannot do.
Courtesy of the NBA, that's Giannis. Game 6 post-game press conference, clinching the NBA championship over the Phoenix Suns, always believing no obstacle too big. The new biography is called Giannis. We're exploring his life on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Maren Fader writes about the mantra of Giannis's late father, Charles. If you could accomplish something today, why wait until tomorrow? Go get it today. Do you live by that as well? It's all things Giannis's life, career, 800-642-1234. Maren Fader with us for the hour. Let's go to David now in Arena. Hi, David. What is your story?
Hi. Hello. I'm an artist, and I painted life-size portraits of the Milwaukee Bucks in street clothes in 1988. And I'm curious to know if the author has found out or knows anything about Giannis's incredible anti-racist behavior. Does he speak for other basketball players? I thought in 1988 that the NBA was an example, after once the racial barrier was broken, of tolerating and tolerance for people of color and players of color. And I hope that that continues. Mm. And I would like to know from the author if that is continuing, and if Giannis is actively supporting anti-racist behavior.
Maren, your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's a great question. Giannis is definitely an advocate, and he is definitely supporting anti-racist efforts. And although teammate George Hill was the one that really led the Wildcat strike with the Bucks recently, Giannis was so much a part of that. And what's interesting about it is that I think this is an area in which he's grown. You know, earlier in his career, perhaps because of how vulnerable he was in having just escaped, you know, a childhood where this neo-Nazi group was patrolling his neighborhood, he was rather quiet about race and didn't really speak up about his experiences. But as he's gotten older, you see him talking a little bit more. I mean, during the George Floyd protest, Giannis was there with a microphone and he was saying, I want my kid to grow up safe here. I want him to live in a racially tolerant place. You know, Black people obviously deserve the rights of other people. And so it was really moving to hear him say that. And I think as he gets older, he will continue to raise awareness. One thing the book touches on as well is a lot of Black Greeks want him to speak up about anti-racist things, not just in America, but in Greece, because there's a lot of Black migrants still suffering, still unable to get citizenship. And so I think Giannis has so much potential to continue his work further.
Yeah, and certainly after the shooting of Jacob Blake, you know, shot in the back by police 7 times, the Bucks also did a protest there.
Right. Yeah, and this is an issue that I know is near and dear to Giannis's heart, and I think he will just continue to show his voice. You know, he isn't a person that always wants to be the center of attention. He's a very private person, but this is such important work, and I think he'll just continue to be a very strong voice.
When he arrives in Milwaukee, ultimately, can you first, I guess, back up and take us through the draft? Because all signs were pointing to Atlanta. I mean, he went to Atlanta, toured around even 2 days before the draft. What happened there?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite sections to report, because the Atlanta GM at the time, Danny Ferry, was like, no, I think this guy can be very good. The Bucks, however, didn't get to have Giannis in America. And so they drafted him without knowing his medical information. The Hawks were the only team to get a physical from Giannis. And so it just so happened that the Bucks were able to select Giannis in the draft because they were drafting higher. So it was a big risk, but also a minimal risk in the sense of the Bucks were selecting at number 15. So it wasn't like if this didn't work out, it would be the worst thing ever. The Bucks were at a really critical juncture in their franchise in the sense of, you know, there were so many losing seasons and so much mediocrity that, okay, if Giannis pans out, great. If he doesn't, oh well, you know? Mm. And so when they selected him, it was obviously so devastating for Atlanta because they were really the first team to spend enormous time with him. I mean, I chronicled a secret meeting in Italy in a shoddy basement where Hawks staffers and Giannis had a meeting. And, you know, they were so moved by Giannis's passion and desire to be drafted and have his family come to America and get a public education in America. So the Bucks select Giannis, and it is not the smooth transition that everyone thinks. I think Milwaukee fans, your listeners will remember, everyone really started to fall in love with him because he was trying smoothies and corn dogs and all these things for the first time. But it was actually such a rough transition.
And that Skype back to his family when he was drafted, what was that like to tell his family about how everything in their lives would change?
It was so emotional. Giannis was so happy, and so was Thanasis, who also was able to come to the draft because he had gotten papers as well, fast-tracked by the Greek government. And Giannis was just like, there's no more worries. Like, it's going to be okay. You know, Alex and Kostas are going to get an American education. It's going to be okay. And their parents were so happy, and they held a watch party in Greece, and all their friends and coaches and teammates were there, and it was just such a lovely experience. And Giannis and Thanasis were jumping on the hotel beds like kids. I mean, it was just, it was picture perfect moment. You know, no matter what happened after that, they had made it as a family.
There is this one moment, a story that many of us have heard about him wiring money back to his family and wiring his paycheck back. And this moment where he's literally running down the streets of Milwaukee trying to get to the game. What happened there?
Yes. So Giannis was sending most of his paycheck back to his family, and he went to the Western Credit Union and did that. But then he realized he didn't have any money to get to a ride to go to the Bradley Center, which is where the Bucks played at the time. So he's just running and he's looking frantic. And all of a sudden, this woman named Jane Gallup, who I spoke to for the book, is in her car with her husband. They just went to Glorioso's, and he's like, who is this guy? He looks very familiar. She's a Bucks fan. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh my God, it's Giannis. Like, should we ask him if he needs help? And they roll down their window and they're like, you know, hi. And then Giannis is like, can you take me to the Bradley Center? As if they're a taxi and not a Honda Fit. And, they're like, yeah, of course. And it's this awkward moment. Giannis is just sitting in the back seat. He's so tall and lanky, he barely fits in the back seat. He's crumpling his body to fit. And Jane is like, motherly instinct, like, why does he only have a windbreaker on? We live in Milwaukee. He's cold. Should I ask him if I should buy him something? No, that would be patronizing. She's also freaking out because she's fangirling. She loves Giannis. Anyways, they make it safely to the Bradley Center. Giannis gives them hugs and his autograph in both English and Greek. And then, of course, Bucks GM John Hammond sees Giannis getting out of the car with strangers and says in a tone that many of our dads may have said to us, don't get in the car with strangers. You call me next time.
I just loved how in that rookie season, all the coaches and the team just rallied around this rookie. And one in particular, Russ Geiger, the Bucks assistant video coordinator, who was like tasked to keep an eye on Giannis, to really care for him around the clock, like a second full-time job. And I was wondering if you could just share some of those stories. I mean, the best about the Subaru Outback 97 and Giannis flapping his arms like wings to circulate the air. I mean, you can imagine his wingspan going out both the passenger side and the driver's side window.
I mean, those arms, that wingspan saved them from a freaking blizzard. I mean, Giannis is a human windshield, apparently, according to Ross Geiger. I love talking to Ross. Ross was like big brother in chief / assistant video coordinator for the Bucks. And my favorite anecdote between them was, well, two of them. One of them, you know, Ross taught him everything about America. So they go to the Cheesecake Factory, which is Giannis's favorite place. He called it his fancy meal. And on his birthday, they hand him a sundae, you know, as one does on one's birthday. And Giannis is like, they gave it to me, Ross, because of my three magic letters, NBA. And Ross is like, no, Giannis, like in America, we give you sundaes on your birthday. Or, you know, Ross teaching him how to go to the movies. You know, Giannis, you have to be quiet during the movies. Like, Giannis didn't know that. And then he just wanted to throw popcorn. He's like, Ross, hit me. And he'd have the popcorn out, you know, just like everyone's fave kid brother. And then there were more anecdotes on the more tender side. Like, you know, Giannis was dealing with such intense loneliness because his parents couldn't come over and get the proper visas required to move to America. Their visas, according to my reporting, got denied twice. And so Giannis just felt so isolated and lost and lonely and sad. And one night the two are hanging out at Giannis's apartment and it's getting late. And Ross is like, okay, see you tomorrow. Like I have to break down film. We have practice really early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And Giannis is like, no, like, can you just, you know, what about just doing it here? And Ross is like, no, I have to go. And then Giannis just asks, like pleads in a very tender way, just, you know, can you please stay the night, you know, because he was just so lonely. And it's one of my favorite anecdotes because Ross really realized how much his friend was suffering. And of course he stayed the night, but it also, you know, Ross was one of the first people that Giannis really trusted. One of the first Americans that Giannis really let into his heart and his circle because he grew up undocumented. It was very, very hard for him to do that.
Miren Fader is with us. Her new biography is Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP. Your thoughts on Giannis and his rise, 800-642-1234. Tell us about Coach Larry Drew in that rookie season for Giannis. He was so protective of this young player. What was his approach with really helping him get up to speed on the plays and just, you know, speaking English?
Yeah, Larry Drew realized that, you know, this was not going to be your ordinary coach-rookie relationship. Larry Drew realized that if he said something or gave some instruction, he would have to automatically say it 2-3 times because he just knew that, you know, Giannis's English was not up to speed. Of course, he knew how to, you know, understand things and say things, but not to the extent of 100 plays in a basketball playbook, you know? Mm. And Larry Drew is a father himself, you know, he has boys as well. So he would picture Giannis like his own sons and he would think, what would my sons need in this situation? And so the tender loving care that Larry Drew showed to Giannis really made an impact on Giannis because it was a really hard season for them. They won 15 games. The Bucks were bad that year. And Larry's guidance and just his nurturing spirit, like, hey, Giannis, you know, if you need to text me late at night, you're feeling lonely, text me, I'll be there for you, was just something you just don't ordinarily see in the NBA.
And Giannis keeps these copious notes in a Mead spiral notebook, jots everything down. It goes with him everywhere. What is in the notebook?
Yeah, the notebook is sacred to him. And Kostas, his middle brother, was telling me, look, I don't even know what's in there sometimes, but I know he's just jotting it down, whatever happens. Finally, got down to the nitty gritty of the notebook. He writes down everything that he hears, from basketball wisdom, life wisdom, weaknesses he has, goals he aspires to. It's almost like by writing it down, he not only takes it in more and learns it, but it's so he doesn't forget it. And the reason why he writes it down to not forget it is because he wants to share this wisdom with his brothers. So they realized that the notebook was actually for them, not just for Giannis's benefit.
Author Miren Fader writing about the person Giannis, so much more than a basketball superstar. We get the incredible backstory of the Bucks power forward. Have you been able to see the Bucks at the Pfizer Forum? Maybe you had a seat at the Bradley Center. What games or moments stand out to you? How do you describe Giannis and his element? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Miren Fader here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Miren Fader about her new biography, Giannis. She writes that if Giannis hadn't come to Milwaukee, it's unlikely the Bucks would still be there. This is the player that when the Bucks kept handing him shoes, he felt so uncomfortable receiving them. Like, one person should never be able to have that many when so many people don't have any. Words by Miren Fader. She's with us for about 9 more minutes. Miren, Jason Kidd, Coach Kidd, comes in 2014, and Kidd has a grueling style. You talked to players who found him to be really a mentally toxic coach. What was his relationship like when Giannis also was so relentless in his drive, his worth ethic so strong?
I think that Jason Kidd had a complex relationship with all of his players, including Giannis. I think two things are true. Number one, Kidd was a really positive influence on Giannis in the sense that Kidd was the first coach to say to Giannis, you can be a revolutionary big man. I want to put the ball in your hands and have you be a kind of point guard. And after that, you know, Giannis really took off in terms of triple doubles. And I think Jason correctly identified that Giannis is best when he's dribbling the ball, taking it down court, going straight to the basket and dunking on someone rather than settling for jump shots. However, there was also a side to Jason that was really complex and polarizing, and his methods were quite maniacal at times as well. And through my reporting, players told me that he could be manipulative and hurtful. And I think he treated Giannis a bit differently than, say, Larry Sanders, who I mentioned in the book. But I think, you know, Giannis would have been successful no matter who coached him. But I do think this was an important critical piece in his development.
How does Giannis approach his conditioning?
It's very important to him. I think it's something he continues to work on. If you notice, even throughout this last run of playoffs, and I know he was obviously working extremely hard and playing injured, but he looked incredibly gassed. And I think he just kind of always does. And I think that is because he gives so much mentally, physically, emotionally. He really spills his heart onto the court every time he plays. And so conditioning is something that he always does and continues to work on. And, you know, some coaches like Coach Bud, you know, don't play him necessarily as much minutes as fans would like. And so I don't know if that is a conditioning thing or what, but I do think it's an area of emphasis.
Kind of like saving him, making sure that when he is out there, he's at his best. You know, is that really the approach now?
I think so. I think if you don't curtail Giannis's minutes, and if you don't curtail him and say, hey, you can't work out 7 days a week, he's going to work out 7 days a week. He's going to say, I would like to play every single minute. So part of it is conserving his energy. Part of it is making sure that he's healthy. You know, it's a hard game. Giannis gets beat up in the same way old school players used to get beat up. I mean, half the time they don't even call fouls on him. He's just hammered down there. And so I think there's an argument to be made. He could play more for sure. But yeah, I think part of it is just conserving him and making sure that he doesn't hurt himself by, you know, because his work ethic is so incredible.
Where does Giannis's family sit at games, and how did Charles's sudden heart attack and death affect this player?
Yeah, they always sat in the same place, and Giannis wanted them to be in sight to for able to see no matter where he was on the court, and he would always look to them. Versus other players and their families would sit more or less out of view, and it was so lovely to have them watching his games, and it felt like they had all overcome so much together. And you know, when Charles died of a heart attack prematurely, you know, age, I think 54. It was so devastating for all of them, but particularly Giannis, because, you know, he just felt like we had gone through everything. I thought the worst was over. You know, we made it to America. We have money now. We're okay. And it was so cruel for this to happen. And, you know, it also made him be a bit fearless in the sense of, well, the worst thing ever happened, my dad dying. And so what is there to fear now in life? It hardened him a bit, according to my reporting, but it also caused him to be even more loving and nurturing and to his brothers, his younger brothers, and have that leadership role. He's always been primed to be a father. He's always been that quasi-father figure role.
And he wants a lot of kids, apparently.
Yes. Yes, that one scene in the book where he's filming the 60-minute segment, and he says something like, I want eight kids, but I don't know. Like, yeah, and then Steve Croft, the host of 60 Minutes, is like, well, why not two more? You want to get, you know, a five-on-five squad? And Giannis like, I don't know if my girlfriend's going to let me. So I thought, I thought that was really funny.
You know, Giannis is so frugal. I pick up these moments scrolling Black Friday deals, counting his Oreos, wanting to hold a yard sale to unload some stuff before a move. Was this kind of built into him coming from that poverty as a child?
Yeah, it really is and was. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand. They're like, well, now you're a millionaire. Like, of course you should spend money, you know, but as adults, you know, a lot of us are still the children that we used to be. And even though we know logically things have changed, our environments have changed, we now have money and things like that, there is still that impulse to not buy and to always be aware of how much you have and don't have. And that was something that was very hard for him to divorce himself with mentally, because it's just ingrained. You know, you don't just forget about all those life experiences. And, you know, he didn't even buy first class plane tickets until 2016, 2017, I believe. Mm. You've seen how tall he is. Yeah. That is crazy. Just sitting in coach with his lanky body. So I just think it says so much also about his personality. And I think he said it best. His mom said it best. They all repeated this refrain to me, which is, just because your bank account changes doesn't mean you need to change.
We only have a few seconds left. But what about his playing shoes and how he sees his shoes?
Giannis now having a signature shoe is meaningful because he grew up not having his own pair of shoes. He had to share with Thanasis, his brother. When he got to the NBA, he was filled with shoes and he was like, I don't want this. I can't do this. This is not right. People don't have shoes. Now that he has his own shoes, it's his way of giving back. It's his way of giving other children what he did not have.
And of course, his whole family helped with the design of them.
Yes, I wouldn't expect anything less. Even Veronica got her input. You see the colors, you see the design. It's a family shoe because he is a family man.
Oh, Miren, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This was great.
Miren Fader, staff writer for The Ringer. The new book is called Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.